This show is not a substitute for professional counseling. The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Further, any opinions heard on the show are not meant to replace professional health care and mental health treatment. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional help and are a UA student, you are encouraged to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room. This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling.
Hey, everybody. This is BJ Gunther. Once again, this is Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. I'm a staff therapist at the University Counseling Center, and tonight we'll be talking about depression, how to recognize it in yourself or in a friend. This show's mostly about mental and physical health issues that college students are trying to deal with, and each week we'll have two guests per show with a different topic each week. This week we have Dr. Clay Sheely, who's the director of the University Psychology Clinic, and later on we'll have Becca Kasner. She's representing NAMI UA. It's a student organization for the National Alliance of Mental Illness. So to start off, I want to talk with Dr. Sheely, but first I want to mention that listeners can go, hopefully soon, to www.wvuafm.ua.edu and click on our webpage at Brain Matters to submit questions anonymously for us to answer live on the air. I just want to remind everyone this is not a call-in show, so I ask that you don't call into the station with questions. Now I'd like to introduce Dr. Clay Sheely. Like I said before, he's the director of the University Psychology Clinic on campus. Welcome, Dr. Sheely. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Tell us a little bit, first of all, about your role at the psychology clinic and what services the clinic offers.
Well, as you said, I'm the director of the psychology clinic and also on the faculty in the psychology department. The psychology clinic is primarily the training clinic for the doctoral students in the psychology department who are working toward their PhD degrees in clinical psychology. And we serve just about all ages. I think we see children as young as 3 years old, and we see older folks all the way up to, we've got some clients who are in their 70s, and we provide psychotherapy as well as psychological testing for various issues and problems that people are facing. So we see the whole gambit and across the whole lifespan.
So, and it's really anybody from the community. It's not just students.
Correct. We see lots of university students, but we see a lot of people from the community also.
Is there ever a waiting list? I would think there would be.
Not so much for therapy or treatment, but we do tend to run a waiting list for assessments because there's just a greater demand of that, particularly with educational kind of assessments mm-hmm. for the schools mm-hmm. and here on the university campus.
What about, the main issue I want to talk about tonight is depression. Can you just give us a brief overview of what depression is?
Well, some people have said that depression is to mental health much like the common cold is to medicine mm-hmm. in that it's so common. Most all of us at some point experienced sad, depressed moods, but they're usually short-lived, fortunately.
Yeah.
For others, they can drag on for weeks, and they're much more intense, and that's when we get into talking more about a clinical type of depression that might need some treatment.
How does depression affect college students, in your opinion, in your experience?
Well, I think that the college student is affected much like other people are with clinical depression. I recently saw a survey that was done by the American College Health Association mm-hmm. that showed that about 30% of college students describe depression so significant that it interferes with their ability to function at any given time. So it obviously can adversely impact their academic endeavors.
Yes. Yeah. Are there different types of depression?
Yes. And I'll have to get into a little professional jargon here, but
that's okay. That's okay.
The more severe types of depression are major depressive disorder, which about 6 to 7% of the United States population suffers from, and it's a more severe depression where a person feels depressed most every day, nearly for 2 weeks or more, and their variety of symptoms that they can have, decreased appetite or increased appetite, problems with sleep, feelings of worthlessness, helplessness, hopelessness, and even progress to suicidal thoughts. A lesser form of depression, but still is clinical depression, is what we call dysthymic disorder. And most people who suffer with that report that they've had depression for years and years and years. And then we also, there's bipolar disorder, which individual might have mood swings from being really depressed to hypomania or mania, which is an elevated or expansive mood. And then there's adjustment disorders with depressed mood, which usually is in response to an environmental stressor that leads a person to be depressed. And it can last up to 6 months until the stressor subsides and the individual is able to cope with it better. And then there's seasonal affective disorder, which affects about 5% of the population. And interestingly, it affects women much more than men.
And I would think there would be more, of, obviously, more cases of that this time of year because of the shorter days.
Right. It occurs more frequently in the winter, and it seems to be related to the amount of light that people are exposed to. And I can get into all the theories about the melatonin
and the treatment and the light boxes.
Yeah, real interesting.
I would think too. You mentioned adjustment disorders, and I can speak to this by working at the counseling center. I feel like that's a large majority of the sort of depression that we see at the counseling center, especially at the beginning of the school year in August and September and October. Is that true for
yeah,
you?
Exactly, because students experience a lot of stressors that the average person might not, particularly the incoming freshman. A lot of changes, being away from home, being away from family, friends for the first time, missing family, missing friends, feeling all alone, isolated until they're able to make that transition, develop a network and that sort of thing. Plus, you know, not to mention the demands of class load and that sort of thing that students
academic
deal with.
Demands. Yeah. Yes. What about, you mentioned dysthymic disorder. I had a colleague years ago that described that to me as an overall bad mood. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that that's the way that they experience it. That more days than not, they feel depressed, and it, like I said, it in order to have that diagnosis, it's characterized by years of suffering with that low-grade depression, low-grade sadness, just having a difficult time feeling good.
Yeah, just it's almost like I feel like those people who suffer with dysthymia are just going through the motions. They're able to function, but it's not very fulfilling.
Yes, I think that would be accurate. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to a deeper clinical, more clinical, I guess, more serious depression where some people just can't get out of bed, can't even dress themselves. Their hygiene is lacking.
Exactly, exactly.
What about, you mentioned the signs and symptoms. What causes depression? Do you have any ideas on that?
Well, there seem to be several causes for depression. One is we know that there's a genetic element because depression is two or three times more common in first degree biological relatives. Then there's also biological reasons for depression. There's chemicals within the brain that help transmit information throughout the brain. And some of those chemicals have been shown to modulate mood. And most of us have some imbalances in those chemicals in the brain. But for people who are depressed, they have the imbalances of those particular chemicals that seem to be related to regulating mood. Mm-hmm. And so biology is a significant factor. And then, of course, like you mentioned before about the adjustment, there's the environmental factors, the stressors that occur. And certain individuals seem to be more susceptible to those environmental factors because of limited coping skills, low self-esteem, and those sorts of
factors. Would that also be called situational depression? I have described it before as situational depression. And when we're going to take a break in just a few minutes, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about treatment, but also medication. And one of the questions I have some students who come in to see me, and they will tell me that one or the other parents are depressed, and they take a certain type of medication. And I don't think it's ironic at all that sometimes they are prescribed the same kind of medication. It's as if the same types of chemicals are affecting, like you said, it's genetic. And sometimes the same kinds of medications work for different family members.
Right. And that seems to be related to the genetic component that we were talking
about. And maybe we'll get more into that in just a minute after the break. We're going to go to a break right now. This is Dr. B.J. Gunther on Brain Matters at WVUA-FM 90.7, The Capstone.
Portions of this broadcast made possible by First Presbyterian Church. At First Presbyterian Church, we strive to serve Christ from the heart of Tuscaloosa through traditional worship. In our mission efforts in the city and beyond, our goal is to reach out to all age groups, including our campus ministry. You are welcome to come worship with us at our Sunday morning services at 8:45 or 11 a.m. downtown at the corner of Greensboro and Bryan Avenue. We would love for you to be a part of our growing community.
Was a hole in my right. Well, I told love listening to Friday Night Bloodbath, but afterwards, I always feel frustrated and depressed about our corporate consumer society.
Yeah, when I listen to Gorilla Radio, I get really angry.
Sometimes, when I listen to Hot Buttered Soul, I miss my boyfriend.
Are WVUA shows making you emotional? We're here to help. Starting this spring, join me, Dr. BJ Gunther, for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We'll discuss topics of mental and physical health. Submit questions anonymously to www.wvuafm.ua.edu. Because if you're listening to WVUA, you probably need professional help. We're back with Brain Matters. I'm BJ Gunther, and tonight we're talking about depression, how to recognize it in yourself or in a friend. And my guest right now is Dr. Clay Shealy. He's the director of the University Psychology Clinic. We were just finishing up talking about the causes of depression. And my next question, Dr. Shealy, is how can I find out if I have depression?
Well, that's a good question. There are a number of ways that someone can find out if they're depressed, as simple as there are a number of different assessment tools. Some are posted on the internet at different sites. The most common is the Beck Depression Inventory. And the symptoms of depression are pretty well publicized also. And if you experience those kind of symptoms for 2 weeks or longer, then it's probably a good time for you to either check with your physician or a mental health professional to talk about those concerns and see if you do need some treatment.
Yes, and speaking of treatment, tell us a little bit, if you can, in a nutshell, how depression is treated, some of the ways. You mentioned psychotherapy earlier, and I'd like you to give just a little bit of detail about what you can provide at the psychology clinic.
Okay. Well, the two primary treatment means for depression are psychotherapy and medication.
Okay.
Psychotherapy, the more common psychotherapies for depression that have shown to have the greatest effectiveness, and ones that we use frequently in the psychology clinic, and you all probably use in the counseling center mm-hmm. also, one is cognitive behavioral
yes.
therapy. Which is geared toward dealing with negative thoughts that people, particularly who are depressed, have, and maladaptive behaviors, trying to alter those thoughts and those maladaptive behaviors that are affecting their depression. And then the second common and most researched intervention is interpersonal psychotherapy, which is geared toward understanding and trying to alter relationships that might be factoring into a person's depression. And both have been shown to be very helpful in treating depression.
Do you have any idea what percentage, and this may be not a good question to ask, but what percentage of people that you treat for depression are actually prescribed antidepressants? Is it I would think it'd be a small percentage.
I actually do not have that data, so I'm not sure what percentage of people. I can tell you that depression within a college population, though, is undertreated.
Yes.
Primarily because only about a third of college students who have some sort of clinical depression actually seek treatment. And like I said before, in those who do seek treatment, mm-hmm. usually it's psychotherapy or medication.
Do you think the reason for that is the stigma? of counseling? Do you think it is maybe, I mean, what would be the reason for that?
Sure, I think stigma's the overarching reason, but I think for college students, it primarily is embarrassment,
yes,
shame. They feel like that there's something really wrong with them if they're depressed, or if they have to admit that they're depressed or need treatment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like it's a weakness.
Yes.
Like it's something that you can control.
Yes.
And it's not.
Yes. Correct.
You know, I have a lot of students who, well, not a lot, but some students who are concerned about, if I take an antidepressant, am I going to have to be on this for the rest of my life, or how long will I have to take that? Do you get that question often, and how do you address that?
Yeah, we get that question, and basically I tell them that it's really left up to what they and their physician decides. I'm not a physician. I don't prescribe medication, but from what I understand, it depends on a lot of factors. It depends on how severe your depression is, how long it's lasted, whether you've had other episodes of depression. But in general, most physicians who prescribe antidepressant medication want you to take it for at least 3 to 6 months, because if you come off of it too soon,
You can relapse.
Yeah. And you don't really know if it's because of some sort of rebound from the medication, or if the symptoms just never were controlled. But people start feeling better and they just want to stop the medication. But most physicians recommend that they continue it up for 3 to 6 months, and even longer if they've had other episodes of depression in mm-hmm. the past.
You know, and another thing that, I'm going off on a tangent, but another thing that I've had discussions with students about is, can you build up a tolerance to depression? Because some folks I know have taken depression for a year or so, and then they almost feel, they've taken medication for almost a year, and they almost feel like they have built up that tolerance. They feel like it's not working anymore. Do you ever have that happen, or do people talk about that with you?
I've heard that, and I read some of the research in that area, and it's I don't know that the final answer is in on that, but there mm-hmm. is some research that supports that long-term use, that individuals can build up some tolerance to medication, and some wonder if it might actually exacerbate things with long-term use.
Long-term. And that would be more than a year? Would that be long-term?
Once again, I'm not that familiar with the research,
yeah.
but my recall of that research is they're talking about more years than one.
Mm-hmm.
10
mm-hmm.
years maybe, or something like that.
Yeah. How can I get myself help if I think I'm depressed? You mentioned your physician. But if you don't have a mental health professional, what do you recommend?
Well, there are a number of resources on this campus and within this town, fortunately, for people. So there's professional assistance that they can seek out, and we can talk about some of what those resources are. But then there are things that people can do for themselves. There's a good bit of research that shows that exercise, healthy diet
mm-hmm.
Are helpful with depression. Integrating with others and with activities as opposed to withdrawing and staying by yourself. The more you can get out and do things with others, that's really helpful for you. Those are some of the things that you can do yourself to help.
What about if you have a friend who you suspect is depressed? How would you recommend approaching that person?
Well, I think probably the number one thing that you can do in that situation is listen to them and offer
yes.
support. And then I would also encourage you to try to engage them in constructive activities that might help get them involved. It's important to remind them that most of the time depression does lift, and there is hope that there will be brighter days ahead.
Yes.
And then, of course, if the depression is severe or you're really concerned about your friend, you really should direct them to mental health care. You shouldn't take it lightly and
try to take it on yourself,
right?
You know, because it can get too big for some
exactly.
for a student to handle.
Exactly.
I mean, we've had that situation happen before, and I'm sure, you know, your staff provides consultation services at the psychology clinic as well as at the counseling center where I work, where we have a lot of students call in just to talk to a counselor about somebody they are concerned about. And many times I will tell them, give your friend my name, because a lot of times people are more apt to call the counseling center or the psychology clinic if they have somebody specifically to ask for.
Exactly.
Rather than just a cold call, you know, that's frightening.
Exactly. And if your friend won't make that initiative on their own, then sometimes you can offer to take them.
Exactly. We've had that happen.
See someone.
When we used to be at Russell Hall, you could walk people over. It's not so easy where we're located right now, but you guys are right on campus, so it would be easy for somebody to walk a friend over. I hear the music playing, so that's a signal from Jacqueline, Cliff, and Natalie that we need to go to a break. And when we come back, we'll be with Becca Kastner of NAMI UA. Thanks, Dr. Sheely, for coming on the show. Really appreciate your knowledge.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're listening to Brain Matters, WVUA FM 90.7, The Capstone.
He's got the shadow. He's got
Hey, y'all. This is Dr. BJ Gunther again, and this is Brain Matters. We're talking about mental health of college students, and in particular, we're talking about depression, how to recognize depression in yourself or in someone that you care about. And right now with me, I have Becca Kastner. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, Kastner.
Becca's a student here. Are you a graduate student?
Yes, I'm a third-year graduate student.
Tell me what you're studying.
I'm studying clinical psychology with a concentration in psychology and law.
How far along are you? Did you say your third year?
3 years. I'm about halfway through.
Okay. And you're here representing NAMI UA. Can you tell us what NAMI stands for? I think I said it correctly at the beginning of the show, but you tell me.
Sure. NAMI stands for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And so we have an on-campus group here at UA.
And about how many members do you have? Do you know?
Total, we have about 40 dues-paying members. Right now, it's the officers who are the most active participants.
Yes.
But
and do the most work,
right?
I'm sure.
Sure.
To make it successful. And how new is NAMI? Is it a couple of years, or how long has NAMI UA been around?
NAMI has been on this campus for about 4 years now, but it's just kind of gotten off the ground in the last year or two.
Are there other NAMIs on other college campuses in the state?
Yes, I know there's one at Auburn. I think there's some others in the works. There are campuses throughout the country that are working on developing NAMI programs. We were one of the first in the country, and we're one of the strongest and most active. So a lot
I
of
like
them
to
are
hear that.
A lot of them are
first
kind of looking to
strongest.
Us. Yeah, a lot of them
that's
are looking
synonymous
to
with Alabama. Isn't it?
Sure.
What about nationally? How involved are you? Or is the NAMI UA chapter involved with the national organization?
Sure. Well, we definitely have local, state, and national affiliates. There's NAMI Tuscaloosa that we coordinate with. They are wonderful about providing us with resources, including grant money. We coordinate with at the state level with NAMI Alabama. We go to their state conferences, as well as with the national organization, and especially their sub-chapter of NAMI on campus. We get a lot of support from them.
Can you talk a little bit about who can be a part of NAMI UA?
Any student can join NAMI UA. It is a student organization, so we only allow students from the University of Alabama to be
yes.
a part of it. But anyone can join, and we encourage people to start paying dues after the second event that they come to. But we also have a lot of events that are open to the greater campus, and we encourage anyone to come to those.
Is this mainly for students who, why would a student want to participate? In other words, mainly for students who have family members with a mental illness, or they themselves have been diagnosed. Is there a criteria?
There's no criteria for wanting to be involved. It certainly attracts a lot of people who have a mental illness themselves, as well as people who've grown up with family members, parents, etc., who have mental illnesses. But it's also just for people who are interested in it. We have a lot of psychology majors who just want to get more involved and understand more of what it means to have a mental illness and learn more about.
Yes, and it helps break that stigma that Dr. Sheely and I were talking about.
Yes, absolutely.
It helps break that down and make it more accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. Are any NAMI UA events focused only on depression, since we're talking about that tonight?
Sure. We haven't had any depression solely focused events so far. We've had one on autism. We're kind of planning one on schizophrenia. Every year we participate in the Out of the Darkness Suicide Prevention Walk that happens
yes.
on campus every fall. We were one of the top fundraisers last year, so that
Yay.
Felt good.
I walked it last year and this year.
Good.
Two times around the quad.
All right. Yep. Two times around the quad. So that focuses on suicide awareness and prevention, but we haven't done any specifically depression related ones so far, although mental health monologues, which I think we'll talk about in a few minutes.
Yes, I want to get to that.
Related.
Can you tell us a little bit about advocacy services that NAMI UA can provide?
So far on campus, the major advocacy project that we've been working on so far is to try to get some kind of counseling group group support work at the counseling center started. We're still in the works on that, but just generally trying to connect people with services on the campus. Certainly, the national organization does a lot of policy making. They met with President Obama last week to work on policy around this whole new gun laws and mental health services.
Yes, so. And I mean, it goes back to what Dr. Sheely and I were talking about, students who either don't know how to get themselves help or are afraid to get help. This really provides some, like you said, some resources, hopefully.
Sure. Sometimes.
Because, I'm sorry, I was looking at the website, and it's a wonderful website, the NAMI UA website. Mm-hmm. I want you to give that website out on the air so students who are interested in becoming a member can go to that.
Okay. Well, we're actually in the midst of changing our website, so I don't want to get that out. But I would encourage people to check out our Facebook page. We're at NAMI, NAMI-UA. And you can find us on Facebook that way. Like us. That's where all of our updates are going right now. But we're still in the process of updating our website and changing over to the official University of Alabama site.
That's wonderful. How is NAMI-UA... affiliated. Talk about the mental health monologues, because you mentioned that, and when I asked you to be a part of the show, you know, I asked you to possibly, if you could, bring some stories from last year.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about mental health monologues, when it'll be, what it is, and then we can talk about some stories.
Sure. Well, mental health monologues is this year presented for the third time on this campus in partnership with the Counseling Center, and it's a project that collects anonymous essay submissions from students on campus about their personal struggles with mental illness. So the submissions are then used as monologues performed by student actors at a stage performance. So it's really a collaboration of student submitters and student actors for students, but of course the rest of the campus is invited, as well as the general public in Tuscaloosa. So in addition to awareness of mental health issues, our group's objective is to transform mental health into a topic of dialogue on campus and, again, to erase the stigma surrounding the discussion of treatment of mental illnesses. So that's the main goal of this event. And this year it's being held on Friday, February 8th at 7 o'clock in the Ferguson Theater.
February the 8th at 7 p.m. at Ferguson Theater.
Right. And it's free for students and $5 suggested donation for the public.
Excellent. We'll be right back to talk about mental health monologues, and Becca and I are going to talk about some of the stories from last year's monologues. This is BJ Gunther on Brain Matters at WVUA FM 90.7, The Capstone.
A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel all right when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside, but you don't see too many faces. Coming in out of the rain, they hear the jazz go down. Competition in other places. But the horns, they blowin' that sound way on down south, way on down south, London town. You check out Guitar George, he knows all the chords. Mighty strictly rhythm, he doesn't wanna make it cry or sing. If then an old guitar is all he can afford. When he gets up under the lights to play his thing. And Harry doesn't mind if he doesn't make the scene. Got a daytime job, he's doing all right. He can play the honky-tonk.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, this is BJ Gunther, and this is Brain Matters. We're talking about depression tonight, and we've got guest Becca Kastner, who is a psychology graduate student representing NAMI UA. NAMI stands for National Alliance of Mental Illness. And we're talking right now about the upcoming mental health monologues, which are going to be live in the Ferguson Theater on February the 8th at 7 p.m. Now, where do you get the actors from? I'm curious.
We just held auditions last week, so we did advertisement around campus and especially around the acting department and had a few teachers announce it in their class. We also pull in actors that have done this in the past, so we have some returning faces.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's really neat. That gives a lot of students opportunity.
Sure.
What about, tell us a little bit about the stories that you're talking about. You said that you asked students to submit stories from their personal lives. Is it difficult to get a response? Is it difficult to get submissions? Or do you have so many that you have to, I mean, how many do you pick and how do you pick them?
Right, and that seems to vary year to year. I think it has more to do with our advertising campaign than anything else. Some years we get tons of them. We have to cut them out just based on content or creativity. Sometimes we especially get a lot of depression-oriented monologues or submissions. So we do have to cut them down some years, and some years we're begging people to write into us. So.
Yes, I think that's true with anything like that. You know? So tell us a little bit about how the monologues work. The stories are submitted. Walk us through it. The stories are submitted. I'm assuming they are chosen. Somebody chooses which stories that are going to be acted out. And how many stories are actually acted out?
We try to do roughly 12, plus or minus a couple, depending on length sometimes. So people submit through an online link, it's a SurveyMonkey link, so that they can do it anonymously. We do ask for their email address just in case we need some follow-up from them, ask them more about it. But they're submitted online, and then we go through them, select the ones we want to use, and hold auditions and assign them to actors.
Okay, and then do you have any samples of any of these stories?
I do have a sample from last year. I tried to pick one that had to do with depression and
would
fit with our theme a little bit.
Good, thank you. Do you want to read it?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
They always ask me what's wrong. Nothing's wrong, just thinking, I say. Thinking is right. Thinking about how wrong everything always seems to be around me, I'd rather live in my head than in the real world, because at least there I'm happy. I don't believe in popping pills for feeling sad, and I don't want to bother anyone else with my problems, because there are people out there with worse situations than mine. Some days are better than others, and I'd wager a guess to say that most of the time I compartmentalize the pain. Maybe that's where having difficulty paying attention comes in handy. It's worse at night. Being an introvert makes it hard to be around a lot of people, but being around them helps me forget the pain. So that's an excerpt from one from last year.
That's
get a sample of
that.
That's
sad to me, because as a therapist, I hear that, and I think, oh, I hope that person got help.
Yeah.
You know, because I noticed, I don't know if it was a male or a female, but doesn't want to burden others. Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot with students, and not just students, with anyone that I've seen in the past or I'm currently seeing who is dealing with depression. I think that's maybe almost one of the number one things I actually hear, is that they just don't want, they feel like other students or their friends or their roommates or their boyfriend and girlfriend, they have enough to deal with, or especially their parents have enough to deal with work and their responsibilities, so they don't tell them what's going on. And sometimes if it ever comes down to me having to involve any of those significant others, usually when I disclose this, with the student's permission, of course, the parents or the friends are shocked, mm-hmm. because sometimes people are really good at covering up depression, you know, and functioning.
Yes. We get a lot of feelings of isolation, that no one understands their problems, no one else really cares, that someone just wants to get them a quick treatment, make them pop pills, and aren't really invested in
That's
their problems.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And I think, you know, as Dr. Sheila was talking, it's not just about medication at all.
Right.
Treatment, psychotherapy, you know, talk therapy, we call it, can really work wonders with depression. And sometimes people just need to be able to talk to somebody who can be objective.
Yes.
So do you have any other stories for us?
That's the only one that I brought, but we have a lot along the same lines, and we get a variety of disorders that are discussed, a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, social anxiety, several on bipolar every year. And one of the other interesting themes that I think we see often is that a lot of people have more than one disorder going on that they're working on.
Yes.
We see that a lot, and they are being pulled one way, or throughout their life they're diagnosed with various things, and it's just a very confusing process, and just the whole way through they're just struggling. And
do you ever see a mixture of say depression and substance abuse?
Absolutely, yes. We had a very powerful one last year with an alcoholic talking about dealing with depression, but really the alcohol was covering everything else up.
Yes, and I'd like to have a future show where we talk about that, because there's a lot of people that are self-medicating. It sounds like psychobabble, but it really is true. Self-medicating with drugs and alcohol when deep down inside there's something else going on.
Yes.
And then, you know, the more serious aspect of depression is suicide.
And
we're going to address that in just a minute. I'll have something to say about that in just a few minutes. But I just want to thank Becca. Thank you so much for being on, and I hope that you have. Do you usually have a good turnout for the monologues?
We do. Last year we had about 200 people. We think
that's full. That's a full theater.
Yeah, we're hoping that this is our first year in the Ferguson Theater, so we're hoping that helps.
And it's
draw
free.
People too. It is free for anyone with a CWID card, and we suggest $5 donation to the public. But we also
and
have
about
a raffle.
How long does it last?
It'll probably be about an hour, hour and a half. We're hoping to do a little bit of a talk back at the end and get some of the actors up there and have them answer questions from the audience about what it's like to be involved with this, and have some representatives from NAMI as well.
Yeah, that's cool. What about, you mentioned dues for NAMI UA students. How much is that?
It's $5. Most of that goes to our campus club. Some of it goes to the state and national organization as well,
though. Okay. That sounds good. Thank you so much for being here again.
Thank you. I just want
to let everybody know our time's running out right now, but I want to thank a few people who've made this show possible. Dr. Mark Nelson, he's the Vice President of Student Affairs. Terry Siggers, who's in the Office of Student Media. My production assistants and student colleagues at the Counseling Center, Natalie Beck and Jacqueline Nagel. WVUA Station Manager Cliff Kyle. And my two guests tonight, Dr. Clay Sheely and Becca Kastner. And next week, I mentioned suicide. Next week, our topic will be suicide, and I've titled it Suicide Is Not Painless. It's going to be the effect. We're going to talk to two people who can talk extensively about suicide, how it's affected their lives. The first guest we're going to Dunn. She's the area director for the Alabama Foundation for Suicide Prevention. It's in Birmingham. She'll be down in the first half of the hour at 6 o'clock. And then at 6:30, Mary Turner Roberts, who's a local attorney, she facilitates a group here in Tuscaloosa called the SOS Group. It's Survivors of Suicide. And she'll be talking about us and her experience with how suicide's affected her family. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther. This has been Brain Matters. I'll see you next week. This is WVUA FM 90.7, The Capstone.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you're in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.